From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
To the format that you know that is the Oxford Exxon Podcast. I am Chase Parm, Jeffrey Wright joining me. However, this is not the Oxford Exxon Podcast. We're going to talk golf today, as you probably figured out by either the iTunes description or the content item wherever you click this. This is a brainchild that kind of came to me a couple weeks ago while I was on the golf course. We've had plenty of golf-related guests, a good bit of golf-related banter in the past couple weeks. We decided we want to try to do something with it. So if you like what you are hearing, we hope that you tell other people about it. Get involved. We'll have its own channel soon, but I kind of want to distribute it out on our main network to get going. And today on the podcast, we've got Jeffrey, who I'll let talk in a second. We're also going to talk to Sam Burns. He is the, Nicklaus Award winner from last year, one of the best amateurs in the country, and is soon to be on the PGA Tour. He's already won on the web. He was in Oxford this past weekend. And Sam, Jeffrey, he was more than gracious with his time to kick off this episode.
Yeah, he was really great. And for those that don't know Sam's name, it's always what I've been fascinated by. You know, for instance, like in Memphis, when we have the FedEx St. Jude Classic, one of the knocks has always been the strength of the field. But like when you go back and you look at the names that have played in it, almost every single name has played in the tournament, with the exception of Tiger Woods at some point or another in his career. And unfortunately, when those guys played the tournament, you don't know who they are. Sam is a name that you're going to probably want to remember. He's got one of the most accomplished junior careers of anyone, an unbelievable amateur career. As Chase mentioned, former Nicklaus Player of the Year last year. Really, you know, he's played well in a couple of spot starts on the PGA Tour, and more than likely he will be a PGA Tour pro next year. He's kind of going back and forth this year, but certainly a name that you're going to want to know, because based on his pedigree, based on his resume, that guy actually has the makings of potentially being a major champion.
Yeah, Sam's already had some PGA starts. He has played final rounds in the past month and a half with Tiger Woods and Patrick Reed. He's already won on the web, as I mentioned, and that pretty much means he's going to already have his PGA Tour card next season. The top 25 web.com money winners get their card, but he's going for a money title, because I learned this last week when I was playing in the Pro-Am here locally for the North Mississippi Classic. The number one guy on the web tour money list gets the complete membership without being subject to the reshuffle.
Correct.
Whereas 2 through 25 get thrown into the reshuffle. You never know what tournaments they can get in or not get in. And that's something that Sam is vying for right now, because that's a whole different luxury once you get on the tour.
And further, on top of just the top 25, they will also, there's two pools that alternate back and forth based on 2 through 25 from the top 25 of the money list, and then the web.com tour finals. So you'll get number 126 through 200 on the PGA Tour, the top 75 players that did not make the PGA Tour playoffs, the FedEx Cup playoffs. Those guys and everyone from the web tour will compete in the web final, as well as they get a few exemptions from guys like from the world, like where you'll get, that's how we saw Peter Uhlein get his status and whatnot. So the top 25 of the tour finals, those four events, they're placed into pool B, and they rotate A, B. And so, you know, really there will be some overlap in names for the most part. You know, you could have up to, 49 guys vying for starts every single year, even though you technically have your card. So as Chase has mentioned, it's starts are not guaranteed even if you have your tour card. So it is definitely a difficult, it's definitely a difficult format. And that's why you see so many guys that earn their tour cards, they're back on the web tour the next year. It's not because they're not capable, but they're just not getting starts that a lot of veterans are getting.
Yeah, so with this podcast, as we move forward, we're just kind of looking at it with two golf-obsessed people with some connections. We hope to bring you some interesting names around the game of golf. I've got some things lined up for the next couple of weeks. We start this thing with a great guest in Sam Burns. And I think that golf in general is very applicable for a podcast, because it's not quite so time-sensitive. The players are personalities and kind of have their own quirks, where this thing does make sense to do it moving forward. But we'll get to Sam in a few minutes. Jeffrey, I do have a question though. So this morning, the course at Oxford, the Country Club of Oxford, hosted the North Mississippi Classic last weekend on the web, and it was closed for 7 to 10 days. This morning it opens back up. I got to put my stuff back in my locker. By the way, I feel like it's a positive that Daniel Summerhays, he didn't actually play in the tournament, but he had my locker. There's probably something to a tour pro having it instead of like the web.com hack. I think I can get some motivation, some right karma out of this move this morning.
Or even worse, what if you got like the sponsor's exemption guy that was sharing your locker? Like the guy that's not even really on the tour. He's just, you know, for instance, like Stephen Bowditch played San Antonio last week because he's a former winner, but Bowditch isn't even on a tour right now. Like, you don't want the Stephen Bowditch equivalent on the web.com tour sharing your locker. Instead, you got the guy that, A, it's really best of both worlds because, A, well, maybe it's not a best of both worlds because maybe he could have left some stuff for you. That would have been nice, you know, maybe a dozen balls. I'm just saying, throw it out there. So you didn't get that opportunity. But more importantly, the reason why the guy wasn't in the tournament is because he was too busy playing on the PGA Tour. So,
yeah, overall, no, yeah, it worked out. Well, I think two gloves would have been what you're talking about. I think Tommy Gainey's the guy without a tour, and they brought him in.
Did McKeel end up getting in or not?
He did not, because he was – Sean McKeel, who won the PGA, he was one of the last guys in until someone kicked him out. But with tournaments remaining, it was almost a guarantee that someone was going to kick him out. I think they ended up giving the non-status exemptions to Tommy Gainey, Braden Thornberry, and Drew Love.
See, that's,
I think were the three that got those.
That's where I really do struggle. One thing – I know we always like – crap on the John Deere Classic because it's obviously the week before the British Open and most of the elite players don't want to play there because they want to go over to the UK and they want to get ready for the British Open, and I completely understand that. But one thing that I think that they are so smart about is they use their sponsors' exemptions not to get someone that maybe won a tournament in 1998, rather they give them to a lot of up-and-coming college guys, a lot of guys that if they're on the web tour or whatnot, like even, you know, they'll give them to like the Bryson DeChambeaus before they have status, the Jordan Spieths before they have status, the Justin Thomases of the world. And so I do understand inevitably this is a business, and if you think you have a recognizable name that might sell a few more tickets than the number two kid at Alabama right now that's playing as a freshman – like, I completely understand the idea of perhaps wanting to give the sponsors exemption to that because you're trying to make as much money as possible, because that's the name of the game. You're trying to give as much money to charity and you're trying to make sure that this tournament becomes a fixture on the schedule. But it is a situation where I wish, particularly like web tournaments, like, and as we're seeing it get more and more difficult, like part of the inadvertent consequences of the way that the PGA Tour has rewritten the rules for gaining status, it's forced a lot of these college kids to go pro earlier probably than they would want to, because they have to go when they can get as many starts as possible. So it is a situation where I'd like to see a lot of these, give these up-and-comers a name, because, you know, what if the 2018 version of Justin Thomas ends up getting the sponsor's invite and plays well in Oxford and, you know, best case scenario, he wins, and then you can talk about how, you know, you had a major champion or someone later on, you know, someone that became, you know, a FedEx Cup champion, someone that became a Money Tour winner that you can talk about that won at your tournament. I just wish they would do that rather than giving it to someone whose best days are perhaps looking ahead to the Champions Tour, or perhaps even at the worst case scenario behind them.
So the mystery that I had today that I want to ask you about, and I'm sure I can get the answer here, but last week for the Pro-Am, throughout the tournament, obviously, they change out the range balls. Titleist comes in, you get to hit Pro V1s or whatever they are, you know, on the range for the week. This morning, though, I had some buddies down on the range, so I walked down to say hello. They're back on the range, the white balls with the green stripes. They've changed them back out to the old balls. Where did the other balls go? When they're not going to pack them up and send them to Evansville, Indiana for the Pro-Am this week, so why is the country club suddenly hitting the green and white range balls again?
So if it's anything like it is on the PGA Tour, I only know this because one of my good buddies, his volunteer job at the FedEx St. Jude Classic was the range guy. So okay. He went home with like, I don't know, 20 dozen, golf balls. And now it's a little different on the PGA Tour. Rather than having everyone hitting, you know, the Titleist and whatnot, the equipment suppliers send their own balls. So, like, he has the Srixon Tour Ball Practice Ball, the TaylorMade Tour Ball Practice Ball, the Bridgestone Tour Ball Practice Ball, the Pro V1 Tour Ball Practice Ball, the Callaway. So they were giving them, basically, they were letting the volunteers take them back with them. So if it's anything like that setup, that would be where I would think it would go. Whoever was, you know, whoever was involved with volunteering for the range, or perhaps they were just letting other volunteers. It's kind of like a thank you gift for saying, you know, we appreciate your time. Enjoy this little gift.
I don't hate that, really.
Well, it's part of the reason why he picked the range. I mean, and the range to be where he volunteered, because he is a FedEx employee, so they were strongly encouraged to volunteer at the tournament. So he liked that. And then the other reason why is he thought it was a better way to see everyone and how they swung. And it was, you know, the range is right next to the practice green, so he got to watch, you know, how they were hitting sand shots, how are they hitting their pitches and whatnot. And so he thought it was more beneficial to watch that than to just, you know, maybe be a sign boy and you know, follow the same group that might shoot, you know, a cumulative 10 over and miss the cut. So he thought it was a better way to spend his time. And I, truth be told, I think I find myself agreeing with him.
Yeah, no, I have no doubts about that whatsoever. Let's go to Sam Burns in 1 second here on the podcast. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Zurich Classic a little bit that gets kicked off Thursday morning at TPC Louisiana, of course, that you played last year. So we'll discuss that. But without further ado, here is a soon-to-be PGA Tour card member, Sam Burns.
As promised, now we welcome on Sam Burns. Sam, of course, a two-time All-American at LSU. He was the winner of the Nicklaus Award. He was also, this is my favorite stat about you, Sam. In 2014, there was literally no other junior golfer on the planet that was as good as you. You were the number one ranked junior. I want to know, like, do you ever, obviously when you, you know, you're 17, you're 18, we're always pretty big fans of ourselves at that age, but do you ever think about it in that terms of, like, I'm literally the best junior around?
Yeah, maybe a little here and there. Yeah, that was a good stretch of golf, and you know, for me, it was kind of a cool experience to have that title for a little while and always be able to look back on that and know that at one point I was best junior. So
we'll get into your career mostly, but I figured first we'd start here. A question I'm sure that you don't get asked very often, so I figured it was important to ask it on this one. What was it like to play with Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I've never gotten asked that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a crazy day. You know, obviously, in the game of golf, everyone knows who Tiger Woods is, and even outside the game. So, kind of one of those deals where it's a lifelong dream, and even growing up as a kid, you always want to have the opportunity to play with them. But yeah, I got out there, and it was just, there's so many people everywhere, and people hollering all kinds of stuff at him, and I'm kind of just like a fly on the wall in there, but we had a really good time. He was super nice, so cool day.
I know you started off telling him everybody was there to see you. How long did you think that lineup? Did you ad lib it, or did you kind of go through stuff in your head in the hours and the day before?
Yeah, I may have came up with that one before, but I really was just trying to think of something to break the ice. I guess that worked. But
how'd you break it with Patrick Reed?
We didn't really talk a whole lot.
Shocking. I'm shocked.
But he was nice to me, though, so I have nothing good things. I mean, nothing but good things to say about him.
I wanted to ask you this, Sam. Obviously, we mentioned, you know, the great performance you have at the Honda, and you back it up and you play extremely well at Innisbrook, and then you get into the Arnold Palmer. But I'm curious about this. How difficult is it for you when you're kind of going back and forth between tours? How difficult is it with such a fluid schedule to consistently play well?
Yeah, it's tough. I think it's one of those things where you kind of have to learn as you go. And, you know, there's not really anything anybody can tell you that can really prepare you to actually experience it for yourself. So for me, it's just kind of one of those things where I've tried to learn as I've gone, and kind of learn how to travel and, you know, how to rest. Like, even as a 21-year-old kid, you don't really think that rest is very important until you go play four or five events in a row and you're dog tired after that. So I'm still trying to figure it all out, kind of learning. But, you know, it's been really exciting.
For you, what has been the biggest difference? Obviously, I would presume the strength of the field is going to be a big difference between a Webb tournament and a PGA Tour tournament, especially the ones that you're in with just amazing fields. But when you just compare, you know, the scope of the event, what's been the biggest differences between the Webb Tour and the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I think the biggest differences I've noticed is kind of, it's just, if you could take the Webb and multiply it times 10, you know, just with the people, with the, you know, busy schedules, you know, people kind of pulling you different ways and wanting your time. And so it's kind of one of those things where you have to figure out how to deal with it and how to, you know, kind of embrace things that go on out there and just stuff like that.
Sam, you've got, you obviously have your PGA card for next year. You're pretty close to unlimited sponsor exemptions this year, but you start off Thursday in Mississippi, 5 over after 3 holes. Do you handle that differently or better, you think, knowing that your future is somewhat secure right now versus, you know, if you was counting the chances and knowing you've got to make every week count? I mean, does that change the mentality a little bit when you do know kind of what's ahead for you, son?
Yes, for sure. You know, it'd be different if I was, you know, 120th or 30th on the money list and kind of knowing that, you know, the events are, you know, you're running out of time at that position. So, you know, definitely a good week. Like it was in Savannah, really, you know, makes you a little bit more comfortable out here and having some job security, which is nice. But yeah, it was kind of one of those things. We got off to a rough start today, but was able to kind of get it back under control. So,
Sam, I'm curious about this with the win in Savannah, and you had the kind of the close calls previously at the Honda and at Valspar. Mm-hmm. How much did it help that you maybe didn't get the job done the previous two times, and then you go out and you fire a 65 at Savannah? I just wonder, did you find yourself drawing back on maybe some things that you had learned?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could have pulled one of those off and gotten the Masters, but maybe next year. But yeah, definitely, you know, every time you tee it up, you're trying to learn and figure out something about your game that you didn't know before. And so, you know, having those couple of experiences, especially the Valspar, you know, I was only 2 back with 3 to play and had an unfortunate situation on 16 there, but on Sunday at Valspar. But yeah, it's one of those things where you learn as you go, and you know, you kind of draw back from previous rounds and stuff like that. So definitely helped, and you know, maybe those two kind of got me ready for Savannah.
You've got you're back in your home state next week, the Zurich Classic, the team event with William McGirt. Have we settled on a walkout song? That's all I'm really curious about.
Yeah, with it being in Louisiana, we may go with Colin Baton Rouge. Will and I talked a little bit about High Tech Redneck. we're both rednecks, and so, you know, that'd be a good one to go with. Maybe one of the days we can switch it up. Who knows?
Do you like that event, the team stuff, the walkout stuff, where they try to make it, you know, probably a little more advantageous for the common fan and a little more fun than some of the events?
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. You know, it'll be nice to kind of switch it up. You know, you're playing 30 or 35 events a year, and you're kind of the same thing each week. And so I think it'll be nice for the players and, you know, even for the fans and the tournament to have something a little different. And, you know, I think it gets the guys excited to go down there and play.
Sam, obviously TPC Louisiana is a course I presume that you've seen multiple times. I got to play it last year in about a 35-mile-an-hour wind, and I've never wanted Pete Dye to die more than I did at that given moment. But I kept wondering, when you have that team format, does that change your prep work going into a tournament? Because obviously with the different formats, you know, you get some alternate shot, then you get some best ball in there, or I guess a better ball, as the Brits would want us to say. But does that alter your approach when you go into a tournament like that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe hit a few more balls in the trees and take a couple holes off.
Yeah.
But it'll be a little different. You may, this guy I play with golf with a lot, Kyle Williams, calls it hold my beer shot. Mm-hmm. Where it's a shot you wouldn't really usually try to hit, but your partner's got a good look at it or something. So there'll be some of that going on. And, yeah, I'm just looking forward to a good week, and we're having a good time. So
I'm a big,
what are the,
yeah, Chase, I'm sorry. I'm a big nerd on this. And so Uh-huh. And Chase is to an extent, but just not quite as much. I think Phil Mickelson would think that I'm probably too obsessed with equipment. But I'm curious on this. So when y'all go alternate shot, have y'all talked about what ball you're going to use? How does that get formatted?
Yeah, so it really works out nice if you play the same ball, but we both play different golf balls, and so we'll probably figure that out. You know, Monday, Tuesday, and see which ball works for the both of us. So, on the best ball days, it's not a factor. But obviously, on alternate shot days, you have to play one ball. So, and then we'll figure that out early in the week.
On a similar line, I'm curious about this. What is the better recruitment process when a college is coming after you and you're the number one amateur or number one junior in the world, or when an equipment company is coming after you and you just won the Nicklaus Award?
They're similar in their own right.
I like that.
The second one, there's some other factors that aren't so much involved as a amateur golfer. So
you mentioned running into some trouble at Innsbruck.
Yeah, well, obviously there's a financial compensation as well. I mean, yes, obviously that's a huge factor. But I'm curious about this as well, because Callaway, I think, I just think they're so smart in what they do, especially the way that they market their gear. And you look at it, and I don't think it's really a coincidence the fact that they're growing at the rate that they're growing. But on top of that, I'm curious. What was it the irons? Is it the driver? What is it for you specifically that you said, you know what, this is the brand that I want to go with?
Yeah, so I put when the Epic came out, I was a Titleist guy and used a bunch of their equipment, and then I put the Epic in play, and it was just, you know, really good for me, and it was awesome. And so I was like, man, this, you know, Callaway's got some good stuff coming out. So I kind of just started tinkering with it a little bit here and there, and put the irons in play, put the wedges in play. And then so when I signed with them, I started putting with an Odyssey putter that I really loved. It's been great for me. And then I put the ball in play to start the year, and it's just been really good. So I'm very pleased with all their stuff. And I think, you know, I know their leadership does a really good job, and I've been fortunate enough to, you know, work with those guys so far, and they're as good as it gets.
You mentioned running into some trouble at Innsbruck and different things. Maybe it's this season or just in general. What's the one shot you would like to have over and get a chance to do it again?
Definitely the second shot at 16. Final round at Valspar. Kind of so 16, you know, a tough hole. I hit a pretty good three wood there. Just ran through the edge of the fairway. But the problem was it ran into an old divot, kind of in the front left portion of it, and so. As soon as I hit that ball, the grass just caught the club and turned it over. Then that one hit the cart path and went into the monkey grass, and it wasn't good from there. I would love to have that shot over.
In fairness,
was it club swing or decision or what? What was the kind of the big thing you wish you could do again?
Well, you know, in hindsight, which I wish we had all the time, but I probably would have taken one more club and just kind of punched something up there at the green. But at the same time, it's one of those things where I'm two back, and so I'm trying to win the golf tournament as well. So just kind of a bad situation.
Yeah, I remember watching that on TV, and I didn't fault you at all. The only thing that it brought up to me was, how dumb is it the fact that if your ball winds up in a divot, if that's under any other circumstances on a golf course, that's ground under repair. Like, it's never made sense to me why guys have to play out of a divot. Like, that's ground under repair. Like, it is... you're putting sand in, like, it's
right.
That's technically
right.
Ground under repair by the definition of the rule. It's never made any sense
right.
to me.
Well, my take on it is, you know, in the rough, it's understandable. You know, you hit in the rough, play it wherever it ends up. It's, you know, I think it's sometimes it's unfortunate. You know, you hit a good tee shot down there in the fairway, and then you're at a disadvantage. You know, I think you should be rewarded if you hit. You know, hitting the fairway is not always easy, so I mean, you should be rewarded when you get down there with, you know, a good lot or. At least not in a divot.
Yeah, I do agree with you, but it's also like, it's not like you hit a bad tee ball to wind up in the position that you wound up in.
Right. Yeah, that was, it probably would have been better if it would have been in the divot, just not in the front part of it, like it could have been the start of it, I could have got a club on it.
Right.
You know, not have to worry about the rough at all.
And then lastly, we want to end on a positive note. I'm curious about this. What is, in your opinion, in competition, what's the best golf shot you've ever hit?
Man, I don't know. And probably the most recent, I would say at the Honda holdout at 9-iron on 10, 11, 12. I think that may have been the second and third round.
Did you know it was good off the face?
Yeah. It was a front left 10. So my caddy and I were talking about it. He's like, yeah, let's just hit a 10 feet right. I'm like, all right, yeah, perfect. So I hit it and I pull it about 10 feet. I was like, well, that maybe worked out pretty good. So I start walking, and sure enough, one hops and rolls right in.
Sam, you've been very gracious with your time. We really appreciate it. Play well the rest of the week there in Oxford, and then let's get you up on the big tour sooner rather than later, my man.
Yeah, I agree. Perfect. Thank you guys very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks a ton to Sam there for giving us time during the North Mississippi Classic. Kid showed a lot of fortitude because he starts his round with a double bogey and a triple bogey in the first three holes, makes the cut, gets into contention, doesn't have the best day on Saturdays. At one point, he had to strip down to his pants with his pants legs up over his knees to hit a ball out of a creek. But otherwise,
shirtless too. Make sure it was a brand moment.
Yeah, brand moment. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. But either way, he's headed to the Zurich. He's got a few sponsors exemptions left. Needs a few more FedEx Cup points to secure his car, or not to secure his card, to secure unlimited sponsor exemptions the rest of the year in an effort to get his card. He needs a T4 or better this week to get it done without having to move on and worry about it any further. But for the Zurich, it is the team
Hold
event.
On. Now, Chase, quick question. Yeah. Before we move on to the Zurich, and I was just thinking about this. If you're Sam Burns, other than your PGA Tour when you're in the final group, or you're in the last group at Valspar, you're playing with Tiger in the final round at the Honda. Other than that, probably the most camera time, like the most viral he's ever been, was that shot that he hit shirtless and with his pants rolled up to a nice set of what looked like cutoff khakis. Now, if you're Callaway and Sam's an investment, aren't you pissed? Because that's going to be one of the moments that you see Sam the most, and we can't find any Callaway remnants on him. So, like, is the new move maybe we got to start, like, tattooing logos on players? Because in the off chance that they do have their viral moment in which they either, hit from the water or, because those are always the moments that make SportsCenter. Anytime someone strips down all the way down, that is getting on SportsCenter. You might see, like, two Tiger shots and then some guy that's playing in his underwear. Like, those are the moments that we see the most. If you're just looking for eyeballs, don't we really need to start considering maybe tattooing logos onto players?
Well, the problem that Sam made was he didn't make sure he put his hat back on and got into view. It was the hat that was the mistake.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you leave the hat on, it's just like Joe Cocker. You can leave your hat on.
Like, is it fair that I look at Ollie Schneider Jans and every time I do it, I go, you're missing hundreds of thousands of dollars?
See, that's what I've always wondered. I presume that is the most lucrative retail space, but I've always wondered, is that like the thing that you're making the most money? And I guess it also comes down to, like, for instance, Ollie's obviously not a Nike guy, but Nike, especially when they even made clubs, if you were a Nike guy, you wore Nike head to toe, meaning you couldn't put other sponsors and other logos on your shirts, on your hats and whatnot. You were only a swoosh guy. So if you're that guy, you don't really care if you don't wear a hat because you're getting paid the same either way. Like, I am curious to know how much money is Ollie leaving on the table, but you could also do a spin zone here where Ollie's willing to take whatever the financial hit is and he's okay with it because there's nothing worse than like the Matt Kuchar moment where you look at Kuchar and go, oh, that's a good looking guy. And then he takes off his hat and you're like, oh, whoa. And I presume, based on what I can tell, Ollie's still a single guy. So if you're Ollie, isn't your calling card the fact that, hey, ladies, I'm on the PGA Tour and I got a full head of hair?
It's also complete confidence you're not losing that hair at any point. Like, his maternal side of his family must have just, I mean, chia pet hair in their 70s. Because that's the thing. He's making that hits deal, so he can't lose that when he turns 35 or 40. It's got to stay.
This is actually an interesting conversation, whether or not people understand that, because you know what would make it, what would make me believe in Ollie Snyder Jams even more than the fact that he can hit like a 2-iron 30 feet in the air and then hit it like 270? What if we found out that his entire maternal side is like nothing but cue balls? Like, everyone's bald and he's just so confident that he's keeping his hair. Like, he has that irrational self-confidence that you and I love in particular golfers. Like, that's what makes us believe in him. I almost think it'd be better if he did have a bunch of baldness on his mom's side.
Yeah, I kind of need to know the answer to that now, honestly. And I'm quickly Googling Ollie Snyder Jans and wife and not coming up with anything, so I think you're exactly right.
Smart move. Smart move.
Yeah, just a hunch.
Just another reason to like it a little more.
So, the Zurich Classic, the team event. I love team events. They're my thing. I'm that guy. And for this, we don't have a lot of really interesting pairings, but we have a course that is just weird. It is dead set around very long approach shots into a green, and it really, really maximizes not just iron play, but stupid iron play from stupid distances.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I've played TPC Louisiana, and I played it last year. I want to say like maybe no more than a week right after the tournament. So it was still in phenomenal shape, with one exception. Basically, the biblical flood had come through New Orleans basically the week before. So there wasn't a ton of standing water. You could tell the course was like oversaturated, but it wasn't a ton of standing water. But more importantly, there were like gusts of 30 miles per hour. So for anyone that's never played a Pete Dye golf course, it's a lot of angles and a lot of turns, and it's a big, big venue. And it felt like every freaking hole was dead into the wind. Like, I remember blistered, absolutely smoked a hybrid, which is like my 210 club, and it went, I think, 140 yards. And so it was an incredibly difficult venue to play. And then when you factor in alternate shot, which the guys now will be playing on Friday and Sunday, they've changed the format. It used to be best ball to finish on Sunday, but because basically when you're playing best ball, it makes it almost impossible to catch up because everyone's going to shoot a really good score. Like, they're playing alternate shots because it's way more difficult. So, like, I don't know. I'm somewhat interested to watch this. It's different than, like, a true team event where it's just one team versus another. Like, two-man teams aren't incredibly fascinating, with the exception of a couple of teams. Obviously, Jason Duffner, Pat Perez, we need that group mic'd up. I think we can agree on that, correct?
Yeah, I'm good there. And then here's the other question. Do we get anything whatsoever out of the odd pairing of Matt Kuchar and Bubba Watson?
I'm going to say probably not, but I think there's a pairing that you're missing.
Okay.
We got Rory Sabatini and John Daly paired up.
We do. Which means Sabatini picked Daly, because Sabatini is using for last week to get in. He's picking Daly in this thing.
It's one of those situations where I know a lot of people hate Sabatini. I find myself, he leans into like what he is, so I'm kind of cool with that. Like, the guys that I can't stand are the guys that are kind of pricks, but they don't own it. Like, Sabatini owns it. And so he's like, okay, what's like the most ridiculous person that I could invite to play with me? Let's get Daly. Like, I kind of like that. So,
it's going to be the only time Sabatini has ever played a professional golf tournament with the gallery in his favor.
Yeah. I think that's especially in New Orleans. Now, you could also make the argument, is that the best venue to invite Big John to play with you? Like, I love inviting Big John to play with you in a southern swing state, but I don't know if New Orleans is the venue that you want the Hooters bus rolling up in.
If you're playing like Robert Trent Jones Grand National or Auburn or something, okay, great, have at it.
Yeah. But I don't know if this is the one. Because on top of being hungover, he's also going to have food hangovers.
Okay, so we've got him. We've got Patrick Reed coming off his Augusta win. He is playing his first tournament, paired with Patrick Cantlay, who is emerging as a very likely Ryder Cupper, and also a guy that pisses off galleries because he gets this weird hitch with his wedge where he takes about 2.5 minutes to swing it. This could be a very, very unliked pairing.
Yeah, I feel like Patrick, I feel like he had to pick his partner after Augusta, and so he just went and found whatever the next name was next to his. And so he just like, another Patrick. Okay, we'll just do that.
Yeah, like, how does this work? Like, does he already have Cantlay's number? Like, how does Reed work this out to get Cantlay on his team?
Okay, is Cantlay, I think he's a Callaway guy, right?
I'm looking it up. I don't know. Go ahead.
I think he's a Callaway guy. And so at one point he was a Titleist guy, but I think now he's a Callaway guy. And so I was wondering if maybe Callaway wanted Reed and Cantlay together because they're both kind of the two of the more emerging Americans on their roster. So I was wondering if that was the reason.
I mean, he's a heck of a player. I mean,
oh yeah. I mean, he was the number one ranked amateur in the world at a time. I mean, yes, he's a very, very strong player.
But
2017 what's in the bag was all Titleist still. So I don't know. Like that was I couldn't, and Cantlay kind of has, like, I know he's got the reputation of amongst like fans of kind of being a little short, impatient, if you will. But amongst like tour guys, he's largely thought of as like a really nice guy, which is not what Patrick Reed is thought of.
What are we putting into Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson this week?
Oh boy. What is the opposite of an electric factory? The wet blanket factory? Like, both awesome, like awesome, awesome golfers and guys that you would want to watch on the range. But I mean, if you're talking about a team event, like what is their walkout song? Is it like the White Noise or like a Sleep Machine? Is that what they're walking out to?
They're the high class version of the boring pairing that is Sean O'Hare and Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, they're the richest man's version of that. That's a very good good comp.
Yeah. On the other side, there are some other ones I like. You've got the Spaniards playing together, Cabrera Bello and Sergio this week. Let's see. We've got Daniel Berger and Gary Woodland. I don't hate that group. Kind of like that group this week.
Yeah, I like that one. I also like John Rahm and Wesley Bryan. Those are two guys that are pretty flashy ball strikers. One guy looks awful wearing Adidas gear, and the other guy looks awful wearing Skechers. So that's a nice combination of like two young guys that sort of have like some buzz and the quote unquote it factor around them. So that's always fun to watch.
But how much does personality play into this thing? Because Brian's sort of just this whatever dude, pretty laid back, South Carolinian. And then you've got John Rahm that wants to wrap a wedge around everyone's neck after every missed shot.
Yeah, but he's doing better. That's what I always love whenever you watch an event and he doesn't like basically break his 56. Like everyone talks about, oh, he's maturing. He's growing up. It's like, yeah, I wouldn't say he's like controlling his emotions, but he is, I don't know, he's a stud, dude. Like when you talk about like all of these guys that we talk about that swing it so hard and they have all this clubhead speed, he's actually like, his clubhead speed's good, but it's not like he's Rory out there, you know, leading the tour at like 125 miles an hour. He's the guy that swings at like 115 miles an hour, but because he's so perfect in his angles and, you know, his launch angle, the way that he uses his hands, like he maximizes every single bit of what he's got. And so, like, he's a great guy to watch because he just, God, is he pure it, man. He is such a freaking good ball striker.
I'll give you one kind of like that from a ball striking standpoint. This is going to sound crazy, and I'll give full credit here. Fried Egg is one of the ones that mentioned it first, but I looked into it and thought, yes, Charlie Hoffman and Nick Watney this week.
Yeah, two low-key cool guys.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like, yeah, I'm in agreement with that. Watney, unfortunately, like, here's the question, though, in that group. Who putts?
Well, you just hit it really close where it doesn't matter. So what you,
I think Chaz is a better putter, right?
I can't say that I've watched Watney a ton in the last 18 months. You know, he's not exactly primetime Sunday television?
No, the only Watney that's primetime Sunday television's the cousin Heidi.
Yes.
She's primetime. The question, though, here's my bigger question with Charlie Hoffman moving forward. So you remember last year when I said the reason why I can't believe in Charlie Hoffman's because he cut his hair, because when Samson cut his hair, he no longer was the most feared man in the world.
Correct.
What happens if Charlie grows that tremendous flow back, like that just perfect surfer blonde looks, like locks back again? Can he recapture the greatness that was, or is it one of those situations where once you turn your back on it, there's no going back?
Well, he absolutely could, but here's the thing. He's not going to, because for Charlie Hoffman, I think he started getting on TV. He starts competing in tournaments, and either a wife or a sister or a mother goes, "Hey, you're so good clean cut, you know, under that title of trucker hat. Let's cut this thing off. Let's start shaping ourselves up." And he went full in on that. He bought into it. And now Charlie just thinks he looks good when he's out there. Charlie's good.
Isn't his number one sponsor a garbage company?
There's some truth to that, yes.
So, like, who cares? Like, I mean, right? Like, at a certain point, like, for instance, Charlie Hoffman was extremely identifiable when he had the blonde locks. He's probably a much more consistent golfer now than he ever was with the locks, but if Charlie Hoffman's just on the range and you don't have the name tag or anything, it's not like you recognize him from his swing. It's not like there's anything he does that you go, "Hey, look, there's Charlie Hoffman." He just looks like another, you know, career professional golfer. Like, this is where the Jeffrey Wright PR school would be very different than the corporate PR school.
We're so conditioned for these young golfers and the guys coming straight off. He's like the one dude above all other ones when you don't realize his age. Dude's 41.
Yeah.
Been married since 09 and is 41.
Yeah, and he's had a really long career. Like, he's kind of like the poor man's Kuchar, if you will, where not a ton of wins, although I'm not trying to crap on Matt Kuchar's career. Matt Kuchar's got a great career, but like,
he's more of a low man's like Chucky Three Sticks.
Yeah, but he wins more than Chucky Three Sticks. So he's like a rich man's Chucky Three Sticks. Chucky Three Sticks is the ideal.
Ooh,
like,
you'd rather have Charlie Hoffman's career than Charles Howell?
Personally, because I do think winning matters.
Okay.
Now, Chucky Three Sticks, of course, is the gold standard of being a professional golfer. Like, I think in his career, he's made something like $25 million plus. And, like, in his last opportunities to win, he's like 0-28, but the guy's like never, I think he's made the playoffs every single year since it's been in existence. Like, he's never really lost his card. Like, he just consistently goes out there and understands, "I am a professional golfer. I'm not a professional winner.
Checks.
I am out there to cash checks." Also, I don't know if you saw this stat over the weekend. So Kuchar made his 28th consecutive cut, which is the longest active streak on tour. He's now only 114 short of Tiger's record.
So close.
Right there. Right
Charles
there.
Charles Howell is the 21st most money winner in PGA Tour history.
I would also like to have, I'd like to have that list adjusted for inflation, because two things obviously play into that. Number one, the value of the dollar has obviously skyrocketed, or I guess now a dollar yesterday was worth more than a dollar today. But I would also like to see how much Tiger like bumped up the average purse on the tour, relatively speaking.
Well, it's like, here's a good example of that. Like, I get there's just like the one major, whatever, but Fred Couples in today's world would have been a billionaire. And he's 52 on the all-time money list, is it, because of when he played.
Yeah, it's the other issue where it's like, but I would also like to know, like, I feel like Mitsubishi's still paying Fred Couples a lot of money, and Fred's playing, what, three tournaments a year?
Yeah, wearing a back brace and playing a couple tournaments here or there.
Not ever hitting a range ball.
Yeah. Do you know off the top of your head who the top 10 money winners are as we close the show?
All right, so one's going to be Tiger.
Yep.
Two would be Phil.
Correct.
Three would be Vijay?
That's correct.
Four would be... Is four like a guy that's hotter now?
No. Just a career golfer.
Davis?
Jim Furyk.
Yeah, I can see that. That's, yep.
Okay.
Where's
current current great golfer number five? Go ahead.
Dustin?
Yep. Number six, won several majors.
Six, several. Zach Johnson?
Ernie Els.
Oh, Ernie. Okay. Where's Zach on that list?
Zach Johnson's number 11, just missing my top 10.
That's
Zach Johnson actually just passed Steve Stricker for 11th.
That was the other. I mean, I know everyone goes, "Oh yeah, he's got a Masters and a Masters and an Open at St. Andrews," but like that was the trivia question that was, I feel like, in every group text over the weekend. Hey, Do you know how many tournaments that Zach Johnson's won? I feel like that was everyone's text this weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's 12.
Well, I saw somewhere where Zach Johnson in his career has only had two solo 36 hole leads.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like he's like the ultimate grinder, man. Like he's like, that's just like, you know, he's like a survivalist.
Yeah. So anyway, Sergio at 7, Adam Scott at 8, Davis Love at 9, and then Justin Rose at 10. Matt Kuchar, previously mentioned, is at 13.
Good for him.
Yeah, good. Bubba's at 16, Rory 17, Spieth 18, and so on. But anyway, we will wrap this here show, the inaugural edition. We'll keep continuing to try to bring you great guests, great people throughout the world of golf, and also listen to our ridiculousness along the way as well. So for Jeffrey and especially Sam Burns for giving us a little time today, we'll talk to you again soon.